Welcome back to the campfire. In this episode, we're reading some stories from Wattpad, and they're all written by my good friend, Nerdy Nightmare. So, sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy these creepy stories. The Abandoned Haunting by Nerdy Nightmare. I woke up in a cold sweat, my sheets were messily thrown onto the floor from a fitful sleep. The warm glow of the sun filtered into the room from the open curtain window across from my bed. A glance at the clock on my nightstand told me that it was only a few minutes past 6 a.m. So I sat up and rubbed the sleep from my eyes. As I got dressed for the day, I remembered that today was a day I'd be visiting an abandoned house from the Holocaust that had helped hide Jewish people from the Nazis. My friend Steve had told me about how there was a large group of refugees staying in the attic and crawl spaces between the walls. According to records, the Nazis searched the house, but they found no one there. What they did find, all the possessions of everyone that had been in the house. They found the diaries of children and food left out half-eaten. As they read through the diaries, they were slightly amused to find that the children had been hearing strange noises around them and seeing shadow people during the night. The children said that they were afraid the monsters would take them in the night. Soldiers took everything they found and reported the experience to the superiors. A few months after searching the house, every single soldier that had been there either died suddenly or mysteriously disappeared. I went downstairs and was welcomed by the smell of freshly cooked bacon and eggs. I walked into the kitchen to find my girlfriend putting the food onto plates. As she set the plate down, I snuck behind her and pulled her into a bear hug. She let out a small shriek, then turned around and hit me playfully on the arm. I gave her a quick kiss and grabbed the plate. I ate quickly so that I could meet Steve sooner and we could get on the road. The driveway was very long and narrow, crowded with copious amounts of shrubs that had crept up from the woods on either side. The pathway was marked with gravel that had been worn down to small pebbles by the environment. We had nearly missed the turn where the driveway met the main road because the forest had swallowed it whole. The trees and shrubs at the gravel path had been left undisturbed for so long that they hid most of the evidence of human civilization completely. When we got into the house, it was around 7:30. The house was surrounded by overgrown vegetation, with vines climbing the latticework of the house. It sat at the end of a long, neglected gravel driveway. 60 years of abandonment had left the building in very poor condition. The roof had caved in several places, and the stairs leading up to the porch were cracked and decaying. The windows of the house were caked in dust, and many had been broken. The front door hung crooked on only the top hinge, and it was leaning in a way that left the door frame slightly ajar. There seemed to be cobwebs hanging between every structural surface of the tattered house. As we stepped through the doorway, each footfall was accompanied by the deafening sound of the ancient wood creaking under our weight. We were met with the musty smell of rotting wood caked in dust and soaked with years of moisture buildup. The interior of the house appeared to have been untouched since the Nazi soldiers scouted through. There is nothing on the main floor but a rug and a decaying wooden dining table. From the entryway, we could see that many parts of the floor on the second floor had fell, leaving gaping holes in the ceiling of the main floor. We cautiously made our way upstairs, each ancient step groaning and crackling under our feet, threatening to send us down into the cellar below. When we finally reached the second floor, we could see that the house did not have an attic. Looking up, we could peer through the holes in the roof at the trees and the gray sky outside. Second floor, it was made up of a single room spanning over the entire surface area of the lower level. There was a small blanket in one corner of the room, bunched together and moth-eaten. In the middle of the room sat a small, tattered, stuffed bear, also moth-eaten, and next to it was a dainty china teacup. Three windows in the room appeared to have been, at one time, covered with blankets, but they were now hanging desperately by nails, or fallen off completely into heaps on the floor. Steve slowly crept over to the bear. I held my breath as he knelt down in front of it. He reached out a hand towards it, being visibly wary of its ominous presence. He gently picked up the time-tattered toy, carefully turning it over in his hands. Seemingly underwhelmed, he set the bear down again and turned his attention to the cup. He didn't reach for the cup. Having found nothing interesting on the second floor, Steve and I made our way down to the basement / cellar of the house. The door leading to the stairs was very heavy. It had been only slightly ajar when Steve and I reached for it, but it still took our combined strength to get it open far enough to squeeze us through. The stairs leading to the lower level were stone instead of wood, so we were relieved to not have to worry about falling through them. Being a very old building, it never had electricity. Therefore, it never had light fixtures, and a slight crack of the door let in a sparse amount of dim light from the room above. I pulled out my phone as we descended into the eerie abyss below and turned on its flashlight. The small LED gave off very little light in the dense dust of the new atmosphere. As we reached the bottom, we felt a sudden rush of chilling air fill the space around us. I shivered, and I could feel Steve shaking next to me at the rapid cooling of his skin. I swept the beam of light from my phone around the room. The condensed dust of the room allowed me to only see about 4 feet clearly in the light. We stepped towards the wall, sticking to the sides of the room as we investigated the perimeter of the cell. As we started walking, Steve and I figured out where the captives had been subsiding. On the packed dirt floor, moth-eaten blankets and long, flattened pillows lay in heaps along the walls. Books, pens, and papers lay scattered over the ground, wrinkled from moisture and covered in dust. In the center of the room, the remains of a small fire pit lay, abandoned and crumbling. The ashes from its last fire still settled in the middle. Dirty dishes lay discarded around the pit, the deserted food long since devoured by the insects that resided in the depths of this dissipated house. Few personal possessions sat near the sleeping arrangements. There was another stuffed bear, this one more worn and moth-eaten. Next to one blanket sat a primitive pocket watch, caked in dust, and no doubt long since inoperative. We continued scanning the room, and as I gazed the light over the walls, we saw shallow claw marks scaling the height to ceiling. The both of us slightly agreed to assume that the marks were from a wild animal that had wandered into the house. As Steve and I slowly moved around the perimeter of the room, we noticed a small hole in the foot of the wall. I knelt down to peer inside. The hole was too small for any person above 4 feet tall to fit into. I shone my phone's light into the hole and was appalled to see that the hole went on further than my light beam could reach. I beckoned Steve over with the nod of my head. He meticulously made his way over to me and knelt down beside me. I handed him the phone and backed up so he could get a closer look. After a few moments, he let out a slight stunned, "Huh?" and stood back up, handing my phone back to me. We looked at each other with questioning eyes, but neither of us said a word. I turned and continued to skirt the confines of the accommodation. I hadn't even taken 2 steps toward the steps before we heard a sound echo faintly out of the hole behind us. The sound reminded me of when kids would whisper to each other about something inappropriate, occasionally letting out blushed giggles and sharp gasps. Steve and I whirled around, simultaneously searching for the source of the hushed, distorted murmur. We saw no person, but instead, from the hole, protruded a pale, gnarled, and clawed hand. A thick fog began to billow from the tunnel, flowing out over the floor in delicate wisps and curls. I stood, frozen in a mixture of terror and wonder, watching as another hand appeared from the spewing abyss, the whispering slowly growing louder into piercing, garbled screams. Steve broke me free of my trance, turning around and shoving me towards the stairs. I turned towards the exit, stumbling from the force of Steve's push against me. I fell to the ground. Steve ran past me, glancing back briefly. He grabbed me by the arm and tugged me up toward the stairs. I stumbled forward, trying to regain my balance while Steve yanked me around like a rag doll. I stole a glance back, and over my shoulder, I saw the fog beginning to marble with swirls of black and a deep wine red. There were now two arms extending from the depths of the tunnel. I turned back and grabbed Steve by the arm, sprinting toward the flight of stairs. When I was within arm's reach of the bottom step, I flung Steve at the ascending platforms. I took this opportunity to steal a glance back behind me. Every hair on my body stood on end when I realized what I was seeing. The thing had made its way almost completely out of the crevice. It was staring at me with a piercing amber eyes and a mouthful of large, jagged teeth stretched wide across its face. Its arms and fingers were extremely long and almost as thin as a bone's inside. Its torso was twisted and thin. I could clearly see the outline of each rib, each spinal segment. We locked eyes for a moment that seemed to last for hours. Then it opened its gaping maw and bellowed a distorted roar. It sounded like that of a tiger, but underlying the deep sound was a high-pitched screech that made my ears ring. The sound stunned me out of my bewildered paralysis, and I turned back to Steve. He was scrambling up the stairs, but not making progress. I dove onto the stairs and shoved Steve with my shoulder, helping him move. Suddenly, all sound stopped. I whipped my head around to see that the thing was gone. The thick blanket of fog was being pulled back into the hole. I shrank onto one wall of the stairwell, breathing heavily. I realized that I had tears streaming down my face and I was shaking. Steve and I sat there on the steps for about 20 minutes. It was getting too dark, so we decided to get back to the car and leave this terrible place. As we made our way up the remainder of the stairs, Steve stopped suddenly in front of me, staring at the doorway. I looked around him to see what he was gawking at. Sat in the doorway at the top of the stairs was the old bear we had seen on the second floor. It was facing us, its cold black eyes staring at us. We quickly ran up and past it, back out to the car. I sped down the rough path at a dangerous speed without caring. It's been 2 weeks. Steve died suddenly yesterday without any discernible cause. I'm next. Story 2, The Thing in the Woods, by Nerdy Nightmare. It was a cold and cloudy day in October, 2 days before Halloween, actually. There was a kid called Ben who lived on the edge of the woods. One day, he was playing in his backyard with his dog, which was fairly large and intimidating. Despite its size and looks, the dog was very sweet and never barked or growled at anything. Ben would play with his dog every day and never went into the woods unless he was with his dad. This particular day, however, Ben heard footsteps in the woods crunching loudly on the fallen leaves and coming closer to the edge. It was already near sundown, so he couldn't see very well into the trees. He squinted into the dark forest, trying to make out what was making the sound. It couldn't have been an animal. He only heard 2 feet, and the animals never came toward the edge of the trees. Ben decided the footsteps he was hearing were from his father, and continued playing with the dog. Suddenly, he heard his dad's voice from the woods, calling him to come and help. As Ben walked closer to the trees with his dog at his side, the voice started sounding off. It was his father's voice, but it sounded corrupted. But he kept moving towards the voice anyways. His dog started growling, with her attention focused completely on the tree line. Ben patted the dog's head and continued walking towards his father's voice. He called to his dad, asking what he needed help with, but got no response except that of the voice continuing to call him toward the trees. Moments later, Ben's father opened the back door of their house and called him over. He looked back and saw his dad standing in the doorway, then looked back towards the woods. The voice stops calling, and Ben hears footsteps running back into the trees. He raced over to his father and told him what had happened, and how the dog started growling at whatever was in the trees. His father told him not to go back outside and went to investigate. He came back 20 minutes later, looking tired. He hadn't found anything, because it was too dark to see. The next day, the neighbor kid went missing and was never found. On Halloween night, the neighbor's dog was found about 100 meters into the woods, bloody and torn apart. The only way the dog was identified was from the tattered, blood-stained collar that hung loosely from where the dog's neck had been. No one ever figured out what had been calling Ben into the woods, or if it had been the same thing that took the neighbor kid and demolished his dog. The woods are now said to be haunted by the ghost of the dead boy and his dog. Some claim to have seen the two wandering the forest, trying to warn anyone else from entering the trees. If you stand quietly near the edge of the woods, you can still faintly hear the screaming of the kid and the yowling of this dog deep within the trees. Story 3, Stalked in the Woods, by Nerdy Nightmare. Years ago, Lisa was walking her dog, Jerry, through the woods that surrounded her house. She lived miles from any town, so very few people went that far into the trees. She always felt safe, as Jerry was a large, muscular, and protective Rottweiler. He would bark if anyone got close, until Lisa calmed him down. She kept a pair of earbuds in so she could drown everything else out. Eventually, Lisa stopped halfway through her usually walking route to rest and take a drink. She paused her music and took her earbuds out. Seeing that Jerry had perked his ears up and was looking behind her, she reached for Jerry's leash and put a comforting hand on his neck in an attempt to calm him. He jumped at her touch and sat down beside her, still staring in the same direction. Lisa looked behind her, trying to see what Jerry was staring at. But she saw nothing, and started her music again. They got up and continued down the trail. Jerry had stopped looking in the direction he had been, but kept himself pressed up against Lisa's leg. As they got closer to the end of their walk, she could feel the vibration of Jerry's growl against her leg. He was looking around cautiously and had slowed down. Lisa stopped. She took earbuds out again and looked around. She saw a dark figure move out of the corner of her eye right before Jerry started barking viciously and pulling her toward the direction the thing had moved. As Lisa struggled to keep Jerry from breaking loose, she heard the blood-curdling, inhuman scream coming from where the dog was moving toward. She froze, and almost instantly, Jerry was whimpering with his tail between his legs. She waited and listened, trying to see if she would hear the scream again. A few seconds later, Jerry yelped and whirled around. Lisa turned around to see what made Jerry howl, but immediately regretted her decision. Standing behind her was a human-like creature. It was at least 7 feet tall and was extremely skinny, with long limbs that weren't proportionate to its body. It was completely naked and hairless, with skin so pale, it was almost like freshly fallen snow. It appeared to have open holes where its eyes should have been, and a mouth that looked like it had been cut into the face with a dull knife. Lisa felt Jerry creep up to her leg, and she reached down to pet his head. Before she could register what was happening, the thing grabbed Jerry. She watched in complete horror as the thing proceeded to devour her beloved pet. When it was finished, a few seconds later, it looked back down at Lisa, who was shaking uncontrollably. The thing raised its massive head and screamed, the same scream Lisa had heard only minutes before. The last thing she saw was a huge jaw unhinging in front of her face, and then complete darkness. Hey guys, it's me. Just wanted to say thank you all for listening to this podcast. And I'll see you guys next time.